On this episode, we rewind and listen to our conversation with Dan and Rachel from 15S to 30M. Welcome to another episode of the QI Guy in conversation with, I'm your host as always, Jonathan O'Reilly. Lovely to have you with us. Thanks for listening as always. As you're listening to this, the Easter school break, the Easter holidays is just coming to an end, so I hope you've had a lovely time. And we're just coming to the end of the two-week holiday here in Scotland, so the kids are due to go back to school and nursery and all that kind of stuff next week. So I hope you've had fun if you've been off with the kids, and I hope you've made the most of the slightly quicker commute, the special cause in your commute, as I'm sure you found the roads a wee bit quieter over the last few weeks, and also maybe easier to get parked. Today we're going to do the first, and it's a bit of a test. We're going to kind of rewind and revisit some of our previous conversations over the course of this season of the podcast. I had the opportunity to speak to Dan and Rachel, the kind of brains and the brawn behind the 15S to 30M movement, which is all about kind of, you know, reducing frustration. How can you spend that extra period of time on a task or a challenge, 15 seconds is how they frame it, in order to save perhaps yourself or colleagues or patients that time down the road by removing some of that perhaps frustration, some of those extra steps. And it has real tangible links to the IHI Join Work Framework and how we kind of address those things in our practice that perhaps frustrate us. And it kind of breaks it down and makes it easier to then start to make improvements. And as always, it relies on the model for improvement and that kind of framework and PDSA and testing in order to kind of break that through. But the 15S 30M is a fantastic way to frame it, and it's a fantastic way to kind of start having that conversation with maybe improvement newbies, because it's a much more palatable language and palatable message when you're engaging with staff who are new to quality improvement. So, without further ado, let's revisit my conversation with Dan and Rachel. Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Dan and Rachel from the 15 seconds to 30 minutes initiative or project or movement. Maybe a more apt way of putting it. It certainly feels like a social movement. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, really good, thank you. Very excited to be here and doing the podcast with you.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you for asking us to join you.
Well, again, thanks for taking the time out of no doubt a very busy schedule to join me today. So I just thought we could start with some introductions. Let's let people know who Dan and Rachel are. So Dan, I don't know if you want to go first. Tell us a wee bit about what you do and.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, hi, I'm Dan Wadsworth. So I wear lots of different hats, but the two main hats I tend to wear is the 15S 30M one. So, yeah, started this social movement with Rachel going into our third, kind of fourth year. And, by my other hat I wear is very much admin and clerical and a love of transformation and all change management, which incidentally, I kind of found out that I liked. I didn't know I liked. I didn't pursue that in my career. I worked in the NHS for about 15 years in Bradford in West Yorkshire. And then I'm more recently working at a patient flow technology company. So I'm working with lots of hospitals up and down the UK.
Sounds very interesting. Rachel?
So I'm a paediatric ophthalmologist, so a children's eye surgeon working up in Bradford. That's where Dan and I first our career paths crossed. I'm also a professor of special needs and learning disability eye care for the University of Bradford. But QI, similar to Dan, is I discovered I loved it without realising that's what it was. Dan and I worked together on a couple of projects, particularly around our outpatient admin and appointment service, doing small changes, doing system-wide changes, and really enjoyed working together. Discovered that what we were doing was QI, went and got some training in it, and hopefully you'll hear over the rest of the podcast how 15S30M was born as a result of that.
Yeah, that sounds like a very familiar story, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be able to resonate with that. I don't know that anybody starts out loving QI. I think you don't realise that until you're in the midst of it, and you go, this is quite helpful, this is actually working. So people might be listening to this and thinking, what's this 15S30M stuff all about? And maybe they've seen it on Twitter, and there'll obviously be the usual links and information in the show notes. But what exactly is 15 Settings for 30 Minutes? Where did the idea come from?
Rich, you want to tell the story of how it began, and then I can talk to how we then rolled it out in Bradford?
So 15S30M began as a quality improvement idea that Dan and I were searching for as we applied for the NHS Improvement Sir Peter Carr Award, which was looking for a clinician-manager partnership. We wanted something fun, engaging, that would transform not just our organisation, but could be used anywhere across the UK. But we were struggling for an idea that was going to keep us excited. And then one night, the idea, like so many light bulbs come on, came when I wasn't expecting. So every evening before she goes to bed, I ask my daughter Maddie to clear away all the clothes from her bed and her chair and her floor. And her approach to this was just to sweep everything, clean or dirty, into her wash basket. And one evening I said, right, Maddie, I've had enough of this. If you just spent 15 seconds putting those clean socks that I've just brought upstairs from the utility room, if you put the clean things back in your drawer, or that pair of jeans you've worn for just 20 minutes, if you put them on a hanger in your wardrobe, you'd save your dad and I half an hour in time spent doing laundry, taking things in and out of the wash basket, in and out of the machine, on and off the drying rack, let's pretend we ironing. And that's time that we could be spending having fun together as a family. And I realised that this sort of situation is going on all over every organisation, not just the NHS. Maddie was achieving her KPI. She was doing what I'd asked, clearing all the clothes and the bed and the chair and the floor. But the way she was doing it was actually causing a lot of frustration for me and her dad. And that ultimately was causing her frustration too. So what we thought of is, there must be loads of these little tasks that are going on everywhere, where if someone spent just a few seconds more on a task, that would actually save someone else frustration. We could start a wave, this sort of benevolent cycle within a team, a department, a whole organisation, where someone somewhere is doing something that makes your day less frustrating. And that really is how you spark joy in work. By doing that small action, you know that you're making someone else's day better, and that brings you joy in work. And so that's how it all started.
And I remember when we, because we were actively looking for like a bit of a project idea, because as Rachel mentioned, Rachel and I had worked on some, you know, quality improvement aspects of transforming, I suppose, the outpatient department and the booking service. And we just did lots of small bits and pieces. And I thought, oh, I quite like working with Rachel. This is quite exciting. we have both been described as spinning tops. Going around and spreading all the joy around it. But I did find the NHS Improvement Sir Peter Carr Award, and they were looking specifically for a manager and clinician partnership. And that's where when Rachel came up with this idea, I was like, that's the thing. Let's just put that in. It's a bit of a wild card, but anyway, it turned out they quite liked that, and we ended up winning the Sir Peter Carr Award.
Oh, fantastic.
Which really helped us kickstart. They gave us a bit of a cash lump sum, which they wanted to invest into us and in our developments. And it wasn't really until we actually pitched the idea on the day that somebody on the panel said, so this sounds like a social movement. This sounds like something that's going to spread up and down the country. And we kind of went, sure. thought that far, but yes, go with that. And then that's how it was born then. So we started very much in Bradford, but we then started to share our ideas on Twitter.
So thinking about those early days when you moved it beyond the realm of household chores, Rachel, what were some of the early problems that you started to apply it to within the NHS? Where did you start to see it really having an impact?
What Dan and I like to say is it applies to everyone from chief executive to porter. So there's clinical tasks, admin tasks, exec tasks, anything and everything, patient tasks. So if I speak about one of our clinical things, a simple thing that anyone can do, we said that whenever a patient comes into hospital, recording their allergies on the patient record system, be that in notes or on an electronic system, is something every clinician can do. And that could save more than 30 minutes. That means that next time the patient comes into hospital, if they come in as an emergency or when they can't themselves tell what the problem is, someone's already got that record there. Rather than someone having to ring the GP or try and access an out-of-hours GP record to find that really essential clinical information, if you make certain that you've done it each time, that information might be there to save someone else a lot of stress later on. And Dan's got a great admin one. One of our first pushes actually to launch in the organisation. Do you want to talk about that, Dan?
Yeah, definitely. One of my first 15-second missions was born very much out of frustrations, and it was email signatures. Mm-hmm. And still a bugbear of mine today. We did this big launch first at Bradford because I'm definitely a kind of a, I'll give you a call kind of a, if I can, rather than give you an email. But what I was constantly seeing is, especially if you work across multiple organisations, lots of people just sign off kind regards, Dan. And if you look at the email chain, it doesn't always show you the email address or a mobile number. Mm. But worse than that, some people have the wrong mobile number or no mobile number, but it said mobile number. And so that was a bit of a frustration. So Rachel and I just did a kind of a ninja comms piece where we literally just went out into the corridors and said, does that frustrate you? Does this annoy you? And of course, everyone's going to say yes. So we just did, you know, it takes 15 seconds. In fact, it takes less than 15 seconds to update that email signature. So if I knew your mobile number or your email address, you know, or even where you were in the offices, how much frustration could be saved by just me giving you a phone call and not having to ring somebody else to get their number, to find your number, and it could just go on and on. And we actually saw a big reduction in the amount of people who had then updated their email signatures, especially with job titles such as manager, supervisor, chief nurse. She wasn't excluded. to make sure. And we just made sure that it was just a big reduction. And then I just thought, well, that's going to really help save a lot of time. So that was one of the very early 15-second reductions.
That sounds really useful. I'm always very suspicious when I get that email response from someone and it's perhaps just has their name and where they work, but there's no email or there's no telephone, or in the world of MS Teams and Zoom, there's no maybe details of how you could get them there. We've added that to our email signature. So if folk want to get us on Teams, they can do that. But yeah. Highly suspicious of folk that don't do that.
Well, there's something going on there. another thing we do on the emails, which I've started, is adding in my pre-booked annual leave so you can see when I'm coming up to some leave. And just in a little red notice below, which has been quite helpful. I think Rachel mentioned as well, that's kind of spread into Bradford as well now and across the other hospitals that I work with. So I've started to see it with some of my clients that I work with now. And so that really helps, you know, because I think, well, I'm not going to contact you over those dates because how annoying is it when you come back to 600 emails?
Absolutely. And I have to say that when I did the train the trainers around 15S30M with you and Rachel, I think it was the end of July. And that was one of the examples you gave about the annual leave and the kind of email signature. And I did it straight away. Because I was right. I was going to be off, I think, for 3 or 4 days that week, following the training, and I did it. And it did work. It did kind of reduce email traffic for when I come back. So
you are a 15-second hero.
Yes, these little things have such a big impact. Absolutely. So I'd imagine the idea wouldn't have been fully formed, and although you're given examples of applications, I mean, how did you iterate that idea over time? What kind of changes or significant changes to the approach did you make? Did you refine, etc.?
One of the first things we did was have to learn how to say what we wanted it to be. It took us several weeks to get our, you know, elevator pitch sorted. So 15S30M is a social movement to reduce frustration and increase joy. So ask everyone to do a 15-second task now that reduces frustration for someone else by saving them 30 minutes later on. Reducing frustration, increasing joy in work. So we just stood on the hospital corridor and we said, have you heard of 15S30M? Of course they hadn't. We'd only just made up. And we told people what it was and said, can you think of anything within your day job? Those little niggles are just really frustrating. What some people call the pebbles in your shoe. And people would come up with some ideas. We'd go, great. We could turn those into missions. We talked about how the theory of what we're asking them to do and what little thing they felt they might do to change that. But then we invited them to a workshop. We said, well, we're running some workshops. Do you want to come take this flyer to your team leader or your departmental manager? And people then invited themselves to our workshops, similar to the training that you did, Jonathan. And so with teams, small teams of 6 or 8 people, often from very different departments, we taught people the theory of 15S30M, and everyone leaves the workshop with their own mission. So everyone needs to say, this is what I'm going to do when I get back to my department. And the essentials of the missions, Dan, I'm sure we'll talk about the TARDIS in a minute, but the idea was, this isn't an idea or a pledge. This isn't something I might do in 6 weeks' time when I get round to it. Is that within that workshop, we give you time to come up with your mission and that you know that you are going to do it. So Dan, you're going to talk about what makes a good mission.
Yeah, definitely. So I think when we were going onto the corridors and asking people, you know, what frustrates you, what really gets you going, and it could be endless. You know, you really have to kind of limit that down. But when we say you can come to a workshop and do that, it was really good. And like Rachel said, we definitely didn't make it mandatory or, you know, top down. It had to be organic. It had to be something they felt they could come and do. Except people get a bit carried away and they go, we're going to make all NHS car parking free. Yes, incidentally, we did that, but it took COVID to happen. Yeah, especially NHS England as well. That's all well and good, but you can't really make those changes within 15 seconds. So me and Rachel came up with the TARDIS idea. So any Doctor Who fans will really particularly love this, because what we say is, as long as your idea is small enough to fit through this TARDIS door, then, you know, the knock-on effects could be endless. So what we say is, by TARDIS, we mean it by an acronym, really. So it's a T, so, you know, it's something you can do today. You don't have to plan ahead or do it. It has to be that small that you could just go away and do it, like the email signature thing. A, or a little time, so we're aiming for 15 seconds or so. We're not going to shout if it takes 16 or if it takes a minute, but the idea is it's a small amount of time, which saves somebody else a lot more time and frustration, which is the R, which is a reduction of frustrations. And D is for don't need permission. A lot of staff, especially entry-level staff, you know, they feel like they can't do anything. I'm only a band two is what we get keep hearing all the time. We're seeing so much more than just admin, a big community thing that Leeds Community approached on last year. And you don't need permission to do it. It's just something really small. It won't make that much difference if you didn't do it. And I, for increasing joy in work, which is the full and ultimate purpose of what we're doing. And the S of the TARDIS is something that's shareable. And it can be shared easily with your colleagues, your other staff members, to repeat it, hence the social movement aspect of it, where it can be easily repeated and spread around.
I love that. I think that's such a great way to kind of help people to kind of relate to what you're trying to do. I think it's a great visual around that TARDIS, that way of, you know, small enough to fit through that door. And then, as we all know, having watched Doctor Who, the TARDIS is massive inside. So that's fantastic. Just as you guys have been talking there as well, you've kind of mentioned a few times joy in work, reducing frustration, and obviously the Institute for Healthcare Improvement in America have a kind of joy at work framework where they talk about some of the things. And Rachel, you've mentioned the pebbles. Like all policy documents, it's a bit big and a bit kind of, you know, you're not quite sure where to start. But this feels like a real kind of tangible, practical way of actually getting people on that journey of taking that rather sometimes unfortunate term of joy in work, which feels not always easily connectable with actually more understanding and more able to connect with it. Was that a motivation for you guys? Were you developing this at the same time, or you know, were you linking with that kind of IHI white paper?
Yeah, when we originally put the bid in, I was reading lots about QI and I came across that paper and thought, yeah, this is it. Dan and I are joy in work personified. I wasn't seeing any practical tools, like you said, about what is this? And people are quite dismissive of joy in work. So, you know, this was all 4 or 5 years ago, before the real burnout thing had become prevalent in the NHS. Certainly American healthcare had highlighted it, saying it's the single biggest threat to the future of their healthcare was staff burning out, not having a high turnover of staff by sickness rates. And we thought we can do something about this if people believe that they can create their own joy in work. Mm-hmm. We felt that we need people to come to work every day feeling not just, oh, I've just got to survive another day. How can I get through today? Oh, it's going to be awful. If they turned up every day thinking, I know I can thrive in my job. I know I can enjoy myself. I can bring good to people. It's reconnecting with that. Why do you work here? And certainly within the workshop, one of the most important parts we discovered was a small section where we encouraged people attending to talk just in pairs about why did they come to work in healthcare? What makes a good day? How do they know? How do I know I've made a difference? And really reconnecting with that bit of them that made them want to do the job in the first place. And certainly with non-clinical staff, there are some really quite moving stories that we heard. You know, why work in IT in the NHS? Well, people paying back to their community, a connection with a relative or themselves having an issue with healthcare when they were younger and knowing they wanted to do something to help. So those are really important moving parts, and that's how you begin to reconnect. And then there's a link with, as you say, with quality improvement, and people concentrate a lot on the key aspects of quality improvement, which they see as being patient safety and cost effectiveness. And they are, of course, really important, but often people get stuck with those and say, yeah, we'll get to joy in work when we've got those first two sorted. Well, you'll never have 100% patient safety and you'll never have 100% cost effectiveness. But if you work on joy in work, then the other two automatically improve. And we had some testimonials from some of our nurses on our acute ward, and the nurse said, and honestly, she'd not read any of our stuff, she just found it, found some of our tweets and started doing some missions. And she said to me, do you know what I've discovered is if the staff come into work, know that they can do something that will help each other, then the ward runs better, then they've got more time to be doing those little bits of simple patient care, to help patients not fall out of bed, to make sure their slippers are in the right place, to make sure the medication goes with them to their next ward. I've realised that actually staff sickness goes down because people are excited about being part of something that is helping themselves. And so it really does work in action. It's not just, you know, stuff that people have written down. You can see it within a few days of starting. You see that buzz beginning to happen. So joy in work underpins all aspects of QI.
Definitely. And we wanted something as well, especially with the quality improvement thing. When you go and approach a group of staff and say, right, we're going to do a quality improvement method, and actually you just say some acronyms of PDSA cycles or lens of profound knowledge, and actually, you know, you've scared them all off. You know, I'm not slating it. Of course, they're really important. And they have, there's foundations of fundamental parts of those which form part of 15 seconds, 30 minutes. But what we wanted to do is something that was so accessible that actually all we're saying is find something you want to make a change with. And me and Rachel always say, like, divide that by two, divide it by two again, get it as small as you can. That's the change. And when you explain that you're just going to make a change 15 seconds at a time, that's what we say is like the first foundation steps to your quality improvement journey. You know, then you learn how to make bigger, wider, larger scale changes as well. So we really wanted it to be something that was super accessible, not scaring off anybody, and you bring joy in work is the actual aim of this, not just the fact that you're going to produce a PDSA sample, for example.
Well, I think you're definitely achieving that in terms of making it accessible, because it definitely feels like it is something that is very easy to understand and very easy to get into. Where you're right, absolutely, the language and the terminology that surrounds QI and some of the strategy and policy that sits behind kind of quality can turn people off. But I think 15S to 30M, it totally kind of obliterates that by demystifying some of those terms. And as I look through your website, and you also, both yourself and Rachel, it was a TEDx talk as well. Yeah. It all feels very, very relatable and very accessible. So we've spoken about it being a social movement, and I would also love to hear your experience of doing a TEDx talk. So it's kind of started out now, and you're sharing some examples, but how does it start to kind of spread out? How does it start to kind of go beyond where it's initially formed?
So, yeah, I think that stemmed initially from when we did the interview for the Sir Peter Carroll one. Somebody said it's a social movement. It got us thinking about, OK, we only thought this was going to be a Bradford project because, well, we were only winning that award for Bradford. So it wasn't until we did a few movements and then somebody said, you know, you should share these missions on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And we were like, oh, Twitter, you know, I mean, I'd signed up maybe 10 years ago and followed my favourite bands. But other than that, you know, what we've suddenly found is there's this absolute hidden community of people who are loving healthcare and showing off their ideas that they've done, quick changes here and there. And it wasn't until we started to share them wider on there that we thought, actually, there's something in this. Some people want to know about it, which is why we started to then spread wider than Bradford. Mm-hmm. When we first started, Rachel and I, one of the main things we did was we set our ridiculous, audacious goals because we wanted to aim for the absolute stars. Because even if we didn't hit it and we came a little bit below it, then at least we did, you know, it would still be good. And we said, we want to do a festival, a 15S 30M festival, and we want to do TEDx. We want to do a TEDx talk. And so we did. We just kind of went out and did it. And Rachel and I's approach is probably a bit different. So we wanted to speak to some other people who were doing it. So we were following NHS Horizons and the work that Helen Bevan is doing with her team on there. So we just found a number and we rang her. And we just gave her a quick call. And I remember we did a little excited dance, did Rachel and I, afterwards. We'd spoken to, you know, somebody who was so inspiring to do some change work. And then so we started to think, actually, we can be part of that. And we were part of the School for Change movements. We did a festival down in Plymouth with two amazing people called Carrie Biddle and Gary Mudge. They are our, you know, first and foremost supporters who have consistently done it. And we went down there and we just did a festival. Me and Rachel just did our little talk, but we were hearing from how they had spread the movement down there and how other people spread awareness as well. And then we did another one in Bradford, in our local, which was our first one, and we just did like more of a local approach. So yeah, it just kind of really then started to spread. And we always said, we know it will have achieved a social movement when it moves itself. So literally all Rachel and I do now is we push out the odd tweets from, you know, what we'd like to talk about or share good ideas. And this year, specifically this year, has gone mad. We've had to, for the first time, stop taking bookings because we were just too busy with it. You know, people's really feeling that this is the right time to actually talk about it. Even yesterday, one of my favourite tweets that I saw just came out yesterday. It was a lady that just said, it's taken me 15 minutes, two nurses, three cupboards, two wards to find a cannula. And you can believe it. I've seen that. And actually, she started with a moan. Mm-hmm. And somebody said to her and just tweeted, it sounds like you need 15S30M. And then about 40 hours later, I think it literally was, she's put, I've done it. And she's then created her tray with her notebook and a thing about how you should keep this up to stock. Yes, it might take a few times, but once people go back to that fully stocked tray and it doesn't take that long to find a cannula anymore, people are going to be more inclined to do it. And that's just the spread of the movement.
I was really excited as well today, Dan, to see some stuff
about blood tubes. So at the moment, there's a national shortage of blood tubes, and already seeing people putting. Now, we're not a big fan of the laminated sign sometimes. We're not a big fan of the telling someone else to do something, but on this instance, we'll let it go. Just putting a laminated sign on top of the blood bottle saying, do you absolutely need to do this blood test? Has this patient had the same blood test in the last 72 hours? Please think, because this is going to be a national problem that every single person doing blood tests in the whole country has got to pull together in order that nobody runs out. And I thought, that's a great thing, is that she's just printed something off the photocopier, she's laminated it, whacked it in the blood trolley, and someone else will see it and someone else will do it. And then within that hospital building, there's a real physical sign that we need to just be thinking about whether we're doing every single blood test so we don't all run out of blood tubes. So some of the omissions are, you know, instant things that you just think, oh, I know what I can do. Others you might want to brood on a little bit longer, but it's empowering people to say, you can do this.
And that's what I love to see, it when people on Twitter, then, you know, other people are suggesting our social movement, which is just something that brings me and Rachel so much joy, because then people have heard about it and it's something that they can easily do. And we do send the TEDx talk out when we do, like you said, Jonathan, it's turned from me and Rachel running the actual workshops to actually doing these train-the-trainer sessions where we train other people up to go and do what Rachel and I were doing across the sites. And then the TEDx talk is something we ask them to have a look at because it's bang on 15 minutes.
Yeah,
exactly. Very precise around.
Very proud.
However, you know, we did find that, well, I personally found that TEDx talk quite hard, because what Rachel and I are really good at is just topic and conversations like this where ideas spring to mind and we talk about it. You try and script Rachel and I, and it's not easy.
Someone tried to edit us, Jonathan.
That's I can sympathize, because I do that myself before events or before different sessions. I'll sit there and I'll write out the things I want to say, and I'll have all these bullet points, and when it comes the time to do this, I don't look at it. I just never refer to it. And maybe it's the act of the preparation kind of helps it bleed in, but I don't have anybody editing me, not yet, other than editing myself on here. So I mean,
though, it was a good experience, and it was, you know, valuable to be able to still spread that around.
Fantastic. So, I mean, I think this is a super accessible method, and I think what we've covered here is, and we're seeing, I can see alignments with other kind of methodological approaches and how it fits in to drive towards whatever your kind of improvement aim is, because we've spoken about reducing frustration, increasing joy, reducing waste, you know, that kind of iterative improvement of perhaps the way that we do things. So it seems like there's a real lock here with lots of different methodologies or lots of different approaches within your organization. You know, organizations have preferred approaches, but this could really, really settle in. So listen, thanks very much, guys. As we wrap up here, I just want to give you a chance to kind of promote and tell folk where they can find out more. I take it there's a website, there's a Twitter account, etc.
Yeah, definitely. I would suggest the website has got all things on there. So it's all free and all downloadable. And you can access all our blogs, including podcasts and things like that, and our mission packs. And that can be accessed at 15s30m.co.uk. Or the most kind of up-to-date tweets and things like that are coming from our Twitter account, which is just at 15s30m.
And there's a YouTube channel as well. So if you search YouTube for 15s30m.
The YouTube channel is fantastic, Rachel. I've spent longer than I probably should have sitting on that YouTube channel looking at the videos and thinking, oh, who could I show this to and who could I show that to? So Dan, Rachel, thank you very much for your time today.
No, thank you, really appreciate it.
Thank you, and thank you for helping us spread this further. It's a fabulous thing that you do, Jonathan, so hats off.
Thank you.
A great conversation there with Dan and Rachel. I'm sure you'll agree, whether it's the first time you've listened to it or whether you're one of our long-time listeners, hearing it again for the second time, I'm sure you will have taken something new from that conversation, or perhaps it might even just have reminded you of the power of 15S to 30M. And of course, we'll have all the links again and different bits and pieces in our show notes, so you can go onto the website and find out more about it. And I think it's something that we really should, if you aren't looking at it, have a think about it as a way of kind of introducing QI into that the front line at the minute, and is that the message or the framing that can really kind of harness the power of QI in our kind of point of care services. Thank you again for spending some time with the QI guy, maybe on your lunch break or on your commute. I really appreciate it. Do go back and listen to some other episodes, but don't worry, we'll be revisiting some other conversations in the future, as well as some new content. So until then, make sure you follow us on social media, make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and until next time, take care.